Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Hello, fellow babies. Welcome to Required Reading. This is a mini episode. It's just me, so it's going to be a little crazy. We're covering the fourth book of the Goosebumps original series. That's what the mini episodes are, mostly, except for when they're not. We've done the first three. Hopefully, I will remember in the caption, the show notes of this episode, to tell you, to link to the other ones. And the two Goosebumps books that I've done with lovely guests, Chelsea Pope and Kara Sullivan. It's the World Series. It's Game 5 of the World Series. But that's not what we're here for. We're reading Say Cheese and Die. I have heard people mention this book among their favorite Goosebumps, around some of the Goosebumps that they have remembered the best. I started reading this book 6 months ago, more? I don't know. So we're starting fresh, and it's for you. So buckle up, pull out the book, sit down, we're gonna read Goosebumps, Say Cheese and Die! Halloween is in 2 days. I do want to make it a habit of reading the opening line to you, okay? There's nothing to do in Pitt's Landing, Michael Warner said, his hands shoved into the pockets of his faded denim cutoffs. Yeah, Pitt's Landing is the pits, Greg Banks said. Doug Arthur and Sherry Walker muttered their agreement. Pitt's Landing is the pits. That was the town slogan, according to Greg and his three friends. Actually, Pitt's Landing wasn't much different from a lot of small towns with quiet streets of shady lawns and comfortable old houses. Yeah, it feels like Goosebumps is always about suburbia. Do we agree? Sound off. We are gonna lose the World Series. We are three pitches in to this whole game. You don't care about baseball. But book two, an LA Dodgers baseball hat was important. And they're losing. I don't remember what year this was from, but we've got a little outfit description. Crimped black hair, big yellow shirt over bright green leggings. We can probably assume early 90s, right? Oh, well. Okay, the children are talking about baseball, okay? Chapter 1 summary. 4 children are bored. There's Greg, the good-looking one. Bird, the jokester. Feels like there's always one of those, at least in the R.L. Stine books. And I want to be like, there isn't that in real life. Maybe that was me. Then there's the girl, Sherry, and then there's Michael. He's not quite fat, but no one would call him skinny. There's a abandoned creepy house in the neighborhood, and Michael says, you know, we're all so bored. Let's go in the house. I'm gonna be whispering for a little bit. I hope you enjoy it. A little ASMR. Nothing happens in chapter 2. They're in the house. They're a little scared. Greg is the sensible one. He's also the hot one. He doesn't want to be the sensible one. Already we're having a lot of, you know, fake out scares, cliffhangers at the end of chapters. Not really effective. I think because you know, here's the thing, if you find a dirty mattress in a basement, run. That's not the scary thing from R.L. Stine's writing. But a dirty mattress in a basement, maybe if it's sitting up, you know, maybe leaning against something, maybe that's different. But still. Okay, back to normal volume. Some of you are disappointed. Some of you are relieved. Chapter 3. They open a closet, they're trying on clothes. The clothes are all dated. So I think 60s, 70s, lots of tie-dye, such and such. And then they open a cabinet and find a camera. And that's the end of the chapter. There's no cliffhanger in the sort of typical way. It's just, oh, a camera. And I like that. Good variety. Chapter 4, Greg turns out to be a camera enthusiast. He turns the camera, takes a picture of Michael. Michael falls off the stairs and lands on the hard concrete and is still. For a second, I thought Michael was going to die in his children's book in chapter 4. And then he goes, oh, my ankle. And then footsteps up above. Chapter 5, they find a set of stairs. They try to open them. There's a voice upstairs. They say it's Spidey. Have I mentioned Spidey? He's a homeless drifter man who people assume sometimes sleeps in the house. I don't know if we've got that confirmed. And then the doors won't open. I just got so tired all at once. So immediately, like the next sentence, the door opens. Michael, as soon as he's out of the house, is feeling better. By the time they get to Michael's house, is fine, completely unchanged. As they're leaving the house, they see what they presume is Spidey. Again, I don't think we've gotten confirmation of that. All in black, staring at the window at them. And then when they're at Michael's, they decide to look at the picture that Greg took. And it is of the moment just after Greg took the picture. So they're saying the photo should be of Michael posing, but instead is of Michael falling. And Michael's like, no, there's no way that could be possible. You didn't take that picture. That's weird. And Bert is like, no, it took a second. The end. Greg gets home. His dad has a new car. He's like, this is so sick. He takes a picture of the car, goes upstairs, hides his new camera because his parents are going to ask where he got it. And he hides it in a secret compartment in his headboard. And apparently, like, his parent, that's the funny part to me. Like, his parents bought this thing and it had a secret compartment already in it. Although what I do like that, because children should have secrets, you know? Be safe always, but children should have a few secrets. I think that's nice. And then he looks at the picture. It's like a Polaroid. And the car is totaled. And then dad says, let's have dinner. I want to take you for a drive in my new car. Something bad is going to happen. It's Halloween night and we're whispering again. They go for a drive. They almost get into an accident, but they don't. Then they come home and Greg asks to take a picture of his older brother, Terry. He takes a picture of Terry making a funny face. Then the picture comes out and Terry looks very serious and he's not in his bedroom with his computer. Is that the playground across the street? Okay, genuinely scary moment. They are at Bird's baseball game, Little League, pardon me, and they take a picture of Bird striking a funny pose, but then the photo comes out and he is laying in the picture, lifeless on the ground, vacant face, mouth open, head and body bent at unnatural angles. That's good. That's scary. We're about 32% of the way through. But these kids are incredible demonstrations of underreaction. And I mean, it's been a minute. Is that all Goosebumps kids? Greg just keeps going like, I don't know. Something's weird. Wait, this was a Twilight episode, Twilight Zone episode, that starts with a couple robbing an antique store, and they take a picture of the wife, and then in the picture she has a fur coat. This is a Twilight Zone episode.
Okay, can you hear my cat purring? So, Bird falls down in the baseball game. Everyone gets scared, but he's pretending. And let's remember, I didn't tell you this, early on in the game, Bird was chastised, I think, by the girl, Sherry, about being the boy who cried wolf. And then, later in the game, the next chapter, he gets hit in the head by a baseball, no helmet. And frankly, that's something I worry about a lot. And so then he is lying down on the ground, just like the picture, but for real this time. Okay.
We being the Los Angeles Dodgers, just won the World Series, and we
had no business winning that World Series, but it happened all the same. And speaking of baseball, let's return to this book, which we thought would be about cameras, but is also equally, thus far, about baseball. Also, I'm thinking about Agnes Moorehead, who shares my birthday. Let me know if you can hear all the fireworks and sirens going off behind me. The sirens started the second we won. Anyway, so I don't know if I told you this. After the non-eventful car ride, he takes a picture of his brother. The brother looks silly. I feel like I told you this. The brother looks silly, but in the picture, he looks terrified, right? And there's an unfamiliar background. What R.L. Stine does successfully here is that everything starts happening at once. So Bird collapses, looks like the picture. Terry, the brother, comes running in looking terrified like the picture. He says, "Dad just got in a car accident," in parentheses, like the picture. Very good, bubbling, boiling R.L. Stine. And again, what I like here is that perhaps the cause is supernatural in some way. You know, it's this camera, but the actual events that occur that are scary are your friend getting hurt playing sports, your dad getting in a car accident, like very mundane or rather realistic things. So I really appreciate that. And then in the hospital with his family, Greg is trying to tell them, you know, there's this camera, and he's thinking, well, no one will believe me, no one will listen to me. And again, that is very reflective of childhood. That's something we see in most of these books, especially when, at least when the protagonist is a child. And then chapter 16 is about his friend Sherry being a bitch. That's all. Sherry is one of the friends. She says, "It's my birthday! Bring the camera! I'm bored!" And Greg is like, no. Sherry's like, "You're being stupid." And yet again, she is wearing an oversized shirt over leggings. That's what we know about this girl. Oversized shirt, leggings, bitch. Okay, wow. Comeuppance. Comeuppance alert. So Sherry says, "Take my picture." And then she's invisible in the picture. There is no Sherry. She says, "Take it again." She's invisible again. Then she says, "Ugh, fine. Let's go play truth or dare in the woods." Everyone comes back out of the woods later for cake. And mom says, "Wait, where's Sherry?" And now that chapter's over and the next one starts. The police are there. He tells the police about the camera. They don't believe him. Typical. He goes home. The house is empty. His room is ransacked. Someone has been looking for the camera. Oh, and he assumes it's Spidey, the guy who wears all in black and lives in the house. And there was a figure all in black at the Little League game. Watching, by the way. Two bullies come up to the boys. They say, "Give me the camera." Greg says, "No, thank you." They accidentally take a picture of Greg as they're like running, as Greg and the guys are running away. And in it, the picture develops and it's Greg and Sherry looking up with like horrified faces at some big shadow. 2 days pass. Greg is like really upset, obviously. And so he tears up the two photographs of Sherry from, or without Sherry in it, right? From the day she went missing. And then 2 hours after that, he gets a phone call from Sherry. Of course, Greg asks, "Where were you?" And Sherry goes, I don't know. I disappeared. And then I showed up in front of my house 2 days later. I don't know. Okay, so they're trying to return the camera. They're in the basement. And Spidey runs into them. And I just need to read you this page. I hope my phone allows it. "The camera is evil," Spidey repeated. "I should know. I helped to create it." "You're an inventor?" Greg asked. "I'm a scientist. Or I should say, I was a scientist. My name is Fredericks. Dr. Fritz Fredericks. My lab partner invented this camera. It was his pride and joy. More than that, it would have made him a fortune." "Would have," I say. "What happened to him? Did he die?" Dr. Frederick's. What the heck was that? Oh no, something. Now my house is haunted. Dr. Frederick snickered. No. Worse. I stole the invention from him. I stole the plans and the camera. I was evil, you see. I was young and greedy, so very greedy, and I wasn't above stealing to make my fortune. When I stole the camera, it caught my partner by surprise. Unfortunately, from then on, all of the surprises were mine. A strange, sad smile twisted across his aged face. My partner, you see, was much more evil than I was. My partner was a true evil one. He dabbled in the dark arts. I should correct myself. He didn't just dabble. He was quite a master of it all. My partner put a curse on the camera. If he couldn't profit from it, he wanted to make sure that I never would either. So he put a curse on it. Okay. If I'm reading this correctly, he put a curse on it at a distance. You know, he airdropped the curse. Do you know about how some primitive peoples fear the camera? There's nothing to indicate he said it like that. That's my little flair on it. They fear the camera because they believe that if it takes their picture, it will steal their soul. Well, this camera really does steal souls. I don't think that's quite what we've seen. It had stolen Sherry away. That's true, it says that. People have died because of this camera. People close to me. And then I learned something just as frightening. The camera cannot be destroyed. And so he's made it his life's mission to protect this. And then they go to say goodbye and he goes, I'm afraid you can't go. You know too much. Okay, so a few things happen and Sherry and the doctor are fighting for the camera. It takes a picture. Greg and Sherry get loose and then Dr. Fredericks is like moaning on the ground and then he stops and they turn around and they're like, he must have died of fright. Because he knows. And then they say, let's see the picture. And it shows him dead, like he is now. They put the camera back and they say, now let's call the police. We know that they're not going to do anything. Greg, you have specifically talked to one. Okay, two paragraphs later, they're like, just kidding. We told the police we found a body in there. And then the two bullies. Did I mention them? They're like carbon copy the bullies out of book three. Maybe I've said all this before. Then the bullies come out of the shadows and they're like, those silly twerps don't even know we saw where they hit the camera. And so the story continues and that's the end of the book. Now let's look at Behind the Screams. And so eventually there is a sequel called Say Cheese and Die. Again! There have been a number of cases of old sewing machines being haunted by the owner after death. The office of lawyer Sigmund Adam in Germany was plagued by a number of frightening activities, including a copy machine that squirted ink, exploding light bulbs, swinging lamps, and a telephone that made calls without the help of any human figures. One of Ireland's most famous poltergeist occurrences, the Galway ghost, melted a phone in your hand. With that in mind, keep an eye on all your appliances at home. Is that fridge growling? Did the microwave just burp? Was your toaster where you left it after breakfast this morning? Did the coffee machine just spit at you? While none of these kitchen appliances has ever been reportedly possessed or cursed, there's always a first. And the last activity is really nice. It's four little story starters where it gets you a little like, here, Tommy and Billy went camping and now you come up with the rest with a friend. I think that's cute. And then apparently there is another Say Cheese and Die Screaming. Interesting. The next one is The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb will be the next Goosebumps book solo episode. This one, as in Say Cheese and Die, number one, number four of the series, I just finished covering. This one for the episode you're listening to right now. Really just feels like a hodgepodge of the first four books, sort of like mysterious haunted house in the first book, mad scientist in the second book. The bullies feel straight out of Monster Blood, book three, so no, not required. You can support the podcast at buymeacoffee.com/required reading or follow me everywhere at Erin R. Bowles. Next week, hopefully, will be Misery by Stephen King, but I really have no idea. Okay, bye! Thanks for listening! What sound is that?
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.